This podcast is brought to you by Metamora Martial Arts, teaching karate and self-defense techniques to children, teens, and adults since 2002. Check them out over at metamoramartialarts.com. Hello, everybody, and thanks for tuning into the Martial Arts Podcast. My name is Adam Bachler. I'm a school owner. I'm a published author. I'm a Martial Arts Hall of Fame inductee. Yeah, that's right. I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But most importantly, I am a martial artist, and I'm producing this show for people just like me who want to hear the stories about the people involved in the martial arts world. Here's what you can expect with the Martial Arts Podcast right now. It's slated to be a monthly podcast. Every month, we're going to be releasing a new interview with a martial arts instructor. And hopefully down the line, I don't know, maybe we can do some more. We'll see how the first couple go. But I'm really excited to see how these go. And one of my goals here, I really want everybody to see that a martial arts instructor, even a martial artist in general, is more than just a belt and a uniform. These are real people. They have real struggles. They have real triumphs. And they have some pretty cool stories, too. My instructors like to share stories about what it was like for them, maybe when they were my age, or even a more recent story. And one of the things that I want to do is just get those stories out. I think these are stories that need to be told. And I think other people like me would enjoy hearing them. There are other martial arts podcasts out there. I highly recommend them. Chris Wilder and Lawrence Kane, I've been listening to these guys for years, reading their books for years. I think they're just fantastic. Ian Abernethy, another guy who is absolutely great, has done a lot of work in the kata application area. I've trained with him a few times here in the States, twice in 2013, and I hope when he comes back to Kansas City in June to be able to get down there and train with him. On this episode of the Martial Arts Podcast, you're going to hear from Dave Hockey. He has more than 40 years of experience in the martial arts. He and I have worked together for about 10 years, and in this podcast, what you're going to hear is he talks the early years, how he got started in the martial arts, and he also spends most of his time talking about a trip that he took in the 1970s overseas with Master Robert Trias. And for anybody who's not familiar with the name, Master Trias brought karate to America following World War II. You might be wondering why I decided to start the Martial Arts Podcast, and let me tell you a little bit about a guy named Colt Cabana. For anybody who doesn't know me, I'm a huge pro wrestling fan, and Colt Cabana is an independent professional wrestler, sports entertainer, whatever you want to call him. But what I really like about Colt Cabana's podcast is he's a storyteller. He gets people in there, people that are in the wrestling business, and he says he gets into the minds, the hearts, the souls, and the lives in the people of the world of professional wrestling, and that's exactly what I want to do here with the Martial Arts Podcast. I was a journalism major in college. I think I have a knack for storytelling. I don't know. I've never tried this. We'll see how this goes. But following Colt Cabana's podcast, which has been going for about 4 years now, guys like Chris Jericho, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Jim Ross now have their own shows. And I think it's great. I'm looking forward to maybe doing my own thing, blazing my own trail as the Colt Cabana of martial arts podcasts, maybe. But one of the other reasons that I like Colt's podcast is he's very DIY. He's not signed by a major organization. He doesn't have the thrust and the money that those organizations would have. And I kind of feel like I'm that way, too. I'm not affiliated with any martial arts organizations at this point. I work a day job, I come home, and then I work on my program. I'm kind of doing my own thing here. One of my thoughts is just ship it, iterate on it. Put something out there, make it better the next time. I'm not expecting this to be a perfect podcast right off the bat, but I'm really excited about what we can do going forward. And I'm really excited that you guys are here listening to me. Now, before we go any further, this is a listener-supported podcast supported by martial artists just like you. Please rate this podcast, subscribe to the channel on iTunes, go to my blog, adambachler.com, find the Martial Arts Podcast there, and also like the Martial Arts Podcast on Facebook. Let people know what you think. So, tell me a little bit about how you got started with martial arts.
I've always been interested in sports. I kind of kind of guy that if I walk across a gym floor, I usually trip on the lines, painted lines on the floor. I was never very good at sports, but I always liked them. When I was in college, I had a some of the PE classes, the required PE classes, were down in the gym, and I was headed down to play handball or racquetball or squash or something, I saw this guy working kata in the gym. I said, "Oh man, that's really neat! I want to learn how to do that." And so I started training with him. I was a sophomore then, and I must have been a junior. It was fall of '69, and I started training with him. Sam Faulkner was his name. He was practicing a Shorinru Nagasato system, Shigeru Nagasato, and there were probably 5 or 10 of us that were training, and I graduated in '71, June of '71, but I stayed in the area, and this is at Hiram College in Hiram, Ohio, about 35 miles southeast of Cleveland, and he continued to have classes there, even though he and I both graduated that in '71, and I made black belt in April of '72. In the summer before I made black belt, we had a opportunity to go out to New Jersey, and I met Nagasato out there. He was putting on a seminar for Bob Hurton, who was Sam Faulkner's instructor. Then we, like I said, it was a seminar, and I had a chance to meet him then. In '76, when I was here in Peoria, I moved to Peoria '74, and was training with Master Keppel. And we had a tour in '76 where the United States Karate Association went on tour over to the Orient. And we, one of the places we went to was Okinawa. And we had a chance to see Nagasato again. We went to his school. And had a chance to see his main student. A fellow named Chiba from Okinawa, and Chiba is one of the islands over in one of the Okinawan islands. He was a really big guy, much bigger than most of the others. I was probably the smallest guy, on the American team. But I was bigger than the majority of the people we encountered. But Chiba was, he was over 6 feet. He's a big guy. Very proficient. Nagasato was out there. He was talking, and he was in his gi, and he did a few moves, but he was really having Chiba demonstrate most of what was going on. Chiba ran forms, he ran weapons, he sparred with several of the students, very well-rounded, He was the system itself. Nagasato's Shorinkan is a much lighter system than Shuriru. Shuriru, we worked the low stances, a lot of power. While there is speed, it's secondary to the power. Well, Shorinru works, you know, focuses the other way. They have a lot of really quick moves. They have power, of course, but their moves are usually a little bit higher, higher stances, more cat stances rather than kibas, front stances. So a lot, the moves seemed a lot lighter. Chiba was able to really make a very sharp contrast. So you could see, boom, when he would really settle in and he would hit something and then he'd be up and he'd be moving real quickly. It was very impressive.
What was it like, what was going through your mind? Had you ever been over to Okinawa before? Is that your first time?
That was the first time I went to Okinawa. The tour, Master Trius went on a tour every summer and would take a team with him. We started from out in California, not sure which, probably San Francisco or Los Angeles, one of the major airports. And we flew to Hawaii. There was an opportunity. We went out and tried to find where Imperato's school was. He had instructed some of the people that were in Peoria. We went to Japan. We saw the Kodokan, and they had a tournament, a karate tournament that was held in the Kodokan. There were probably five rings, maybe six rings. All the officials sat at a long table. The competitors were all black belts. There were no colored belts. Schools marched in, each school from the locker rooms. Each school came in, announced, and here's the school, and they all paraded in. While the tournament was going on, all the officials set up the main tables. They were all being served by schoolgirls in their school uniforms. Not karate uniforms, but the educational school.
Like plaid skirt. And
plaid
like
skirts and white blouses.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, that was all girls. Most of the competitors were males. I don't recall seeing any female competitors. They had forms and sparring. What I was seeing wasn't really that much different than what I would see in forms and sparring for students in the United States. There were some people that were pretty impressive. I was surprised at how many black belts really didn't look that good. They all knew their forms, but you weren't seeing a lot of precision in some of the movements. Like I said, there were a few people that did really well, but and those were usually the ones that were identified as taking home trophies, or at least I don't recall if there were a lot of trophies given, but they were identified as the winners.
And this was in 76, so you were competing heavily by this time, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. When I came to Peoria in 74, right away I started competing. I would say we went maybe to 20 tournaments in a year. And the tournament season was usually in the spring, but we went to tournaments all year round. There were just more in the spring, leading up to the Nationals in June or July. Usually June, and then in July would be the tour.
Now, in addition to the tournament that you saw at the Kodokan, what else did you see while you were at...
In Japan?
Mm-hmm.
Not an awful lot. Japan, in 76, there weren't an awful lot of people that were speaking English, or at least that were speaking English to us. Japan, it was very clean. The people were elegant. They were very proper. They had their game face on all the time. In sharp contrast to Korea, because during the Korean War there were so many Americans there, a lot of them were speaking English. We went to some of the shops in Korea, and people were right away. You know, we were in Korea. We were in Tokyo for like 2 or 3 days. We went to Korea for 2 or 3 days, and in Japan, we were in the hotel, and we went out a little bit, but not too much. And in Korea, the shops were very welcoming, and they'd want to bargain with you. And if you were early in the day, then they wanted to make the first sale, and so you'd really get much better deals for the first sale, because they feel that the custom is if your first sale is a good sale, then the rest of your day is going to be a good day. So, we went out shopping in the mornings, and people were very friendly. Shopkeepers were very friendly, and got some good deals. I got several ties for my work. I got some carved stone, carved and painted with a picture of some cranes on it, done in white and reds. White and reds and black. It was a gray stone circle about maybe 6 inches or so. And there were some cranes, standing in water and on the shoreline, and you know, kind of tree hanging over the water, and gave that to my dad. Gift to my dad. Then we went to the Kukiwon, the Taekwondo headquarters. They very grudgingly let us in to see the facility. There's a picture in the pinnacle of the person that was in charge then. I think the fellow's name was Kim, but I don't recall exactly.
How does that get brokered? Does Master Trius like talk to whoever's in charge?
Yeah, and sometimes his students will do it. Sometimes he would. Sometimes there was a things would go more smoothly than others. He's a pretty rough person when it comes to making nice. He's pretty direct, and he calls it like he sees it, or he did call it like he saw it, and that tended to rub people the wrong way at times. And the Americans in general, we had several characters on the tour, and they would really give very strong evidence for the ugly Americans. They were just brash and rambunctious. In sharp contrast to many of the, certainly to the Japanese, sharp contrast to the Japanese. Not so much in contrast to the Koreans or to the people in the Philippines who went down there, the Filipinos, but to the Chinese in Taipei, Taiwan. A very sharp contrast. We went to, from Korea, we went down to Taipei, and we were in there. I had a chance to go to the art museum, the National Chinese Art Museum in Taiwan. And then we'd always ask, you know, where are the martial arts? You know, where are they doing karate now? Where are they doing kung fu? Where are they doing this? Where are they doing that? And in Taipei, the people at the hotel and in the shops that we visited, very few of them were speaking English, but even the ones that were speaking English were saying, oh, there's no martial arts around here. And that was in sharp contrast to what we had, you know, what we knew. And we ended up going out to the park early in the morning, and there were hundreds of people in the park. And they're just in small clusters. They were working Tai Chi, various, you know, brands of Kung Fu. many of them, you'd often see like they had a fountain area that was kind of raised from the grounds, like maybe 6 or 8 feet higher than the rest of the grounds. And there was a older gentleman up there running a form, and the students were kind of on the apron of the fountain, and they were, which was a little bit lower, and they were running the same form. There was maybe 8 or 10 people in that group. There were other groups. We saw one group where there were was a younger group. I would say probably teenagers. They may have been in their 20s. Salt and pepper fella, salt and pepper hair guy, maybe in his 40s, was leading a group. Well, there were a couple. There were 3 or 4 that were kind of up in front, and then there were the other students, and there was a larger group there, perhaps 20 people, 25 maybe. And there were a lot of just, you know, individuals working, 2 or 3 people working. We saw a fellow that was, he'd do some very slow movements, very relaxed, and then he'd do the application. He'd have the student come out, and he would work the moves full speed, power, looking exactly like the full speed when we were working our Shuri Ruka. The applications weren't just punching and kicking. There were throws, locks, and in that particular that pair, 2 or 3 maybe, the teacher was, I'd say in his 40s or 50s, and the student was maybe 30s. Definitely adults, there were a lot of 20-somethings. I was surprised to see that many.
But you didn't notice any kids out in the park that day?
I'm not remembering seeing. There may have been. My memory, though, is mostly that there were more 20-year-olds out there, 20-somethings out there, than I had expected. There certainly were older folks. Many of the instructors, as I'm recalling, this is 50 years ago, 45 years ago, 40 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, 76, so 38. As I'm recalling it, there was the old guys that were teaching. There were middle-aged and 20-somethings as students. There may have been kids there, too. I don't recall seeing any kids. This seemed much more casual as opposed to formal classes at some location. My guess is that this was a little bit more informal, and if there were martial arts schools someplace, I don't know, maybe those would cater to children more to stay in business. I don't know. Certainly in the United States, people are running schools, people who are successful running schools are successful because they've got a lot of kids in there. I don't know very many people that cater only to adults that are making a go of it. You know, if they're teaching full time and making a living at it.
Now in the park, what was the group, like how many were in the group when you guys showed up?
We went there about between 6 and 7. And
in the morning.
In the morning. The park was maybe the size of a city block. There were paths all the way through it, fairly dense paths. You'd see a cluster of people in you know, gathered around a fountain or gathered around a bridge, by a particular bridge over the stream or something. There'd be a major intersection in all the paths, like 5 or 6 paths coming into a little circle, and you'd see a group working there. There was a grassy hill bordered by bushes and fancy trees, and there'd be a group there. There was a little like a tea house kind of a building structure, maybe a 6x6 building, and the stone out in front, the stone patio out in front of it, there were people working. It was, you'd see a bench, and there'd be a man sitting on the bench, and he's pointing at 2 students doing their number and making corrections to them.
Did you guys participate in the classes, or were you just kind of watching?
We were spectators. We tried to ask some questions. It was Randy Coleman and me. We tried to ask some questions. Most of them, I think, were put off by our size and they just said no English. They didn't have any qualms about letting us watch. They weren't really talking to us for whatever reasons. In the Philippines, we were in the Philippines for, again, 2 or 3 days. And had a chance to visit Remy Priestess's school down there. He was in Chicago at the time, but one of his head students, top students, a fellow named Gonzalez, showed us around. They're stick fighting, using the rattan sticks, using the staff, the 6-foot staff. It was very impressive. They were very, very quick, and the Filipino martial arts, while based on mostly on the stick fighting, is empty hand is also very, very quick. The people that we saw had pretty good footwork. They really knew how to move. spinning around, moving around their target, positioning themselves. And it's very similar to the Arnis that I'm learning now. That I'm constantly struck by, this footwork is a lot like what I was seeing over in the Philippines. The dojo in the Philippines was on the second floor of a very busy street. It was in I would say low middle or low income area. The room itself was probably 8 meters long and maybe 2 meters wide. I'm sorry, meters. 4 meters wide. 12 by 24, give or take a little. Had a big window at the end. The dressing room was the bathroom. It was about maybe 4 feet by 4 feet. The shower was a spigot like you'd see on the side of your house for water. And the pipe was not enclosed or anything like that. It was a pipe that came up through the floor, and there was a metal strap, you know, the kind you see with holes in it. And that was sort of nailed to the wall to hold the pipe in. And it was about maybe 5.5 feet off the floor. It wasn't above my head. And the floor itself was, it was a wooden floor, but there was tin on about two-thirds of that 4x4 area, and kind of ran toward the wall, and there was a hole in the wall. That was the toilet, that was the shower drain, and that was where you washed your hands.
Wow.
Yeah, that was their training room, their dressing room. And it was a tattered cloth curtain that went down about from the doorway, and the door itself was maybe a standard door size, but it was essentially a very worn sheet and tattered along the bottom, and the bottom was about knee level. So that was their bathroom and training room, or changing room for training.
So it was functional, but it wasn't pretty.
Absolutely. And it stunk. The people knew how to do their martial arts. They were pretty impressive. Lighting was bulbs hanging from wires. It was not an impressive sight at all. But the people working were pretty impressive. It was a very young group. They were telling us they were in their 20s, that you sure looked younger than that. Small. I was bigger than all of them. And like I said, I was the smallest guy on the team. Streets in Manila were very crowded. There were these jitneys, the painted buses all over the place. Nice shops. Sometimes I had a feeling that they were really trying to pull one over on the Americans. Some of the shops, not all of them. Got a really nice scarf for my mother. In the Philippines. Then we went to Okinawa, and we were there for 8 or 10 days. Had a chance to, we stayed at the Japan Airlines hotel. Nobody spoke any English. And we ended up getting a taxi driver named Smiley Shinzato. And he spoke, broken English. He had done some training a few years before in martial arts. And he had picked us up at the airport and was, very curious about, the Americans down here, and we were telling him and everything. And he talked himself into being our taxi cab driver for the whole time that we were in Okinawa. And he was taking us to all the fancy places and the best bars, the best sushi places. We went down to Shiredo, where they have the weapons, and we went to Shuri Castle. We had a chance to go to the Shuri Nomon, the Shuri Gate, to the castle. The castle wasn't open in 76, and it had been all bombed out during the war, Second World War, and they had just restored the original gate, but they were still working on the rest of the castle. When we went back in 99, for Matayoshi's, the anniversary of his death. He died in 98, summer of 98, and we went in 99 to, for the memorial on the anniversary of his death. There were about 300 schools from around the world that came and participated in that big demo. And we had a chance to see the Shuri Castle then. Went through the tour, and that's quite a building. Very impressive. We got some pictures of people training, some old-time pictures of people, martial artists out there in the courtyard, and they were all just running for them. beautiful artwork in there. We saw the throne room itself, where the king would meet visitors and everything.
So on the 76th trip, this was, like, you guys did all this in one trip? Obviously not going to the castle, but going to Japan, the Philippines,
yeah.
Korea.
It was about 20 days, 21 days, yeah, about 3 weeks, give or take a little. Yeah, it was, we got to see I'd say maybe 8 or 10 different schools in Okinawa. We had a banquet with the Weishiru people, Kanbun Weishiru, or Kanbun, or his son. I think it was the father that hosted it, and the son was running the school, I think, at that time. Anyhow, at our banquet, there's a tradition where you give a toast, and then you sing a song. And at that time, Okinawa was had just become one of the prefectures of Japan. 72, it became a prefecture of Japan, and there's no love lost between the Okinawans and the Japanese, but there are also many Okinawans who are very strongly in support of the Japanese. Well, Master Weishi made his toast and sang his song. Master Trias got up and made his toast. And then he sang, "I lost me mommy, I lost me pappy, I fight under Japanese. I lost me uncle, I lost me auntie, I fight under Japanese. Gonpai." Raised a lot of eyebrows. he was in the service. In the Navy, I believe, and had met Tonji Singh as when he was boxing on the base, Navy base. And according to the stories, they say that Tonji Singh would come and watch the American boxers, and he said to Tonji Singh, "Well, I want you to show me American boxing footwork." And Master Trias, a real big guy, and Tonji Singh is probably smaller than me. And he said, "No, you know, I'm not going to do that. You know, I hurt you." And he kept pressing. And finally, Master Trias agreed. Couldn't lay a glove on him. He's just all over him. And so Master Trias agreed to let him teach him some of what what he was doing, what Tonji Singh was doing. Tonji Singh was a Buddhist missionary in the Solomon Islands, and my guess is that that's where Master Trace was stationed at the time. I don't know the specific city or base, but the lore that has come down to us is that Master Trias met Tonji Singh on the base, and Tonji Singh was a Buddhist missionary in the Solomon Islands. So I assume it was in the Solomon Islands. Apparently, Tonji Singh showed Master Trias Singhi moves as well as karate moves. Because Master Trias came back to the States and was teaching the Shorei Katas, Shorei Goju. And we have kind of an interesting blend of Okinawan and then with Gopaisho and Don Incho, more Chinese influence. Many more animals. You can see the contrast between running Don Incho and running Nihonshi. You know, there's no animals in Nihonshi, mm-hmm. At least no apparent animals. Unless you want to count a ridge hand as a variation on a chicken strike, chicken hand. They're both lateral moves, lateral forms, but much, much different in flavor. If Tonji Singh taught Master Trias both of those styles, interesting to know where he had picked those up. The other schools in Okinawa, when we were in 76, when we were on the tour, we went to Chokuhiga's school. His was in his garage, one-car garage. Had some mirrors across the back. Pretty small. We went to Yasuhiro Konishi's school in Japan, and his school was probably, it was beneath his home. He had an apartment up on the second floor, and the school itself was off of a very narrow alley, maybe a 2 meter alley. As you walked in from the alley, the dojo space was probably, well, maybe 8 meters by 8 meters, 24 by 24, about the size of this one. And along one side for about maybe 6 feet was storage, and there was a rail that, like a 2x4, about 4 feet off the ground. On the back part of that is where all the stuff was stored, or equipment bags hanging, kind of net bags that were hanging from the ceiling so that the uniforms could dry. We had kendo equipment, kobudo equipment. But there were essentially two areas separated by another 4 foot high rail, a 2x4 rail. The guys changed on one side, the gals changed on the other. It was just open space.
With a 4 foot wall or a 4 foot rail in the middle.
Yeah, there was basically a 4 foot rail in the middle. But it was a rail. And like the supports, the vertical supports were probably 3 feet apart from each other. Not a lot of privacy. But, you know, everybody changed that way. Kamisa was down at the north end of the room. You entered from the south. There were doorways that led to up to the upstairs, just off from one side of the Kamisa. We saw a couple of his students, third and fourth degrees, maybe three or four of his students. They ran very nice forms. One of them sparred with Mike Awad, who was a giant. I mean, he's well over 200 pounds, and fast as all get out. Tough fighter. He was going for points, and the other guy was going for techniques to take him out. I think they were fairly evenly matched, even though Mike was a lot bigger than him. Mike said he hit pretty hard. He said he'd been hit a lot harder by Americans, but the Americans were also a lot bigger. Their forms were nice. They didn't stand out, certainly not the way Chivas did. Weapons were very good.
What kind of weapons did they use?
Bow and scythe. That was all that we saw at Konishi School. At Nagasato's, Chiba demonstrated all the weapons. Kama, Aku, Nunchaku. No Nunchaku. And staff and tie, bow and tie. We went to Higa's school. There was a fellow named Yagi that Master Trias met with. there were a couple other guys, I don't remember their names, schools we went to, and the schools were uniformly, they were very small. Floor space, never more than 8x8. I mean, Funakoshi's school, not Funakoshi, Konishi's school was 8x8. A large school. But compared to any of the schools you see in the States, it's pretty small.
So to kind of wrap up, you know, what was the mood like when you guys got back home? Like, were you guys really ecstatic about it?
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think one of the things that I brought back was that we're doing martial arts, or we at that time, we were doing martial arts that we thought we were doing it the right way. And we trained hard, and I think we were doing some pretty good stuff. What we saw didn't impress us in some cases, and in other cases, it was much better than what we were doing. There was a very broad range, and I think in general, most of us came back thinking, well, the Americans are pretty good. We're not great yet. We aren't as good in some areas yet. But this is within our reach. I don't know that we hung on to that attitude that where am I going with this? Americans now are trying to get a much better understanding of the principles behind their movements. I think we're trying to get a deeper understanding now than we were back in the 70s. I think we're a lot more knowledgeable now than we were then. Maybe that's because there's a lot more stuff that's been translated, both going from Japanese and Korean and Chinese to English, and from English to the other languages. There's a lot more interaction, and I think the Americans have improved because of that.
Thank you once again to Dave Hockey for being on the Martial Arts Podcast, for being the inaugural guest. That's pretty cool, right? That's something else he can add to his resume. Before we get out of here, a couple upcoming events to tell you guys about. First of all, Saturday, April 12th, I'm being nominated and inducted into the USA Martial Arts Hall of Fame. I'm very excited about that. My Tai Chi Chuan instructor, Steve Aldis, has nominated me for the award, And hopefully on the next podcast, I can tell you guys a little bit about how it went. I can tell you personally, I'm really looking forward to seeing Master Ken. If you haven't seen Enter the Dojo, check it out. It is hilarious. But Master Ken will be there as well as some other martial arts greats. And so I'm really looking forward to that event. Also, Saturday, April 26th, that's 2 weeks after the Hall of Fame, Master Aaron Wayne Duke is hosting the Galesburg Academy of Martial Arts' first ever invitational tournament. We're taking some students there, and I would highly, highly encourage you guys to be on the lookout for that. Be sure to check out Master Duke in Taekwondo Times with Sabam Nemsez, great column, and even greater guy. If you'd like to contact me, my email is adambockler@gmail.com. I'm at Adam Bockler on Twitter. That's my name. You can find me there for everything. With all that being said, thanks to Dave Hockey once again for being on the show. Thanks to BJ Aberle for the music. And thank you guys for listening.